This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more details.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Kay Shaw, and with me as always are...
Zachary Frueling.
And...
Suzanne Williamson.
So, how are you both doing?
I'm doing great today. I'm looking forward to our Ask Me Anything episode. We always want to make sure that you listeners out there are getting the kind of content here on Trek FM you want to listen to and that we're talking about the topics you are most interested in.
I'm doing good. Let's get to these questions.
Okay, well, let's crack straight on then because we've got loads of questions here. The first question that we were sent in was from Chris Aggie. Hope I'm saying that right. And Chris has asked, what is your favorite Voyager episode and why? Who wants to go first?
I guess I will.
Okay.
My favorite Voyager episode would have to be Year of Hell. I can't explain why. It's just I love that episode.
Year of Hell is actually my favorite episode as well. I still remember the first time that I watched that episode and how pretty much about two-thirds of the way through the first part, I was just sitting on the edge of my sofa, heart in my mouth. I can't actually believe what I'm watching. And yeah, it just really, really impactful.
There's even lovely little JC nuggets here and there.
Yeah, there are. The watch.
That and Give Catherine My Best. Oh, when he says that.
There's nothing not to love about Year of Hell, yeah, for sure.
I agree with that. There's so much in here, it's almost difficult to talk about it because we'll talk about it for a whole episode.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to say too much, but it, just the impact of that episode stayed with me for a long time.
So Year of Hell is both of your favorite episodes, yeah, then?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, I went a totally different direction. For me, my favorite episode is actually Timeless. And it's hard to say that because it's not the most ensemble cast episode, right? It's really a Harry Kim and Chakotay focused episode. But it's an episode I go back to again and again and again. I just love that Harry Kim, the perpetual ensign, ends up saving the day years later in that episode. I love it. So Timeless is my favorite. I just keep going back to it. If I were gonna, I think one of our later questions is if you had to show one episode of Voyager to show someone new who hasn't seen Voyager before, yeah, I would pick Timeless. I watch it again and again and again. I've used it to introduce people to Voyager, and it always works.
Yeah, I really love Timeless as well. It's probably in my top 10.
Timeless is a good one. It gives us Salt and Pepper Chakotay back, which is always a plus.
And is he wearing leather in that one? I can't remember. What futuristic clothes,
oh, gosh, is he wearing? Now I'm trying to remember.
I don't know that he's wearing.
I think he's
leather.
Wearing like a sort of bomber jacket type thing, isn't he? Or is that Harry?
He's not wearing like the Miami Vice clothes that he wears in Future's End.
No, he's not doing his Don Johnson impersonation.
Yeah, it's a really great episode. I just think again, it's an episode on an epic scale. And it's really nice to see some characters that don't get a lot of airtime really getting to step to the forefront and star in this one. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Okay, shall we move on to the next question?
Yeah.
So Ian Kimmins asks us, were you happy with how Voyager ended? And if not, how would you have ended it? I think maybe we answered this question a little bit when we wrote our Voyager movie, The Progenitors.
Yeah, I think we did. I think more of the homecoming would be my biggest thing.
Definitely. I want to see everybody reunited with their families. I want to see Gretchen Janeway.
Yeah.
Endgame was absolutely an anticlimactic climax to Voyager.
Yes. It is why I didn't watch Enterprise, because I was so mad.
For me, I think Endgame just ends so suddenly. It builds and builds and builds and builds as an episode, and then it's over.
You know, I think I wanted to see something a little bit like what we see at the end of Star Trek Nemesis. As much as people pan the movie Nemesis, I like that Nemesis ends when they're fixing the ship and they're getting ready to go back out on another mission. You don't even know what the mission is, but you know they're fixing the ship up and they're going to take it back out.
Yeah. Yeah, I really would have wanted to maybe even end the show at the point where it ended, maybe two or three episodes before the end. And then we get a whole proper resolution of everybody seeing their families, the Marquis hopefully being acquitted of all of their crimes and working out where everybody's going next. And obviously, you know, as the credits roll and the little sort of "that's all, folks" comes in at the end. What do we want in there? Janeway, Chakotay kiss.
But you have to have Chakotay and Seven break up, too.
And I love that they gave Neelix a charming Talaxian story to wrap up his storyline, but I really think he should have come back to the Alpha Quadrant with the rest of the Voyager crew.
Yeah.
He should have. He should have been there at the very end. And so should have Joe Carey. To kill him, like, right near the finish line, that was just messed up.
And Lindsay Ballard. Who else could we have? Who else could we bring along to the end? Like, let's take Lindsay Ballard back.
Well, none of the original crew. Well, Kes as well, obviously. We could get Kes. I don't want to be horribly morbid. Kes is probably dead by this point. Well, how long do they live? Like 9 years? Oh, she'd have had a couple of years left.
And if she's not dead already, Voyager's not getting back in one piece, right? You can't get Kes anywhere near
the warp core. No, that's true. She doesn't mix well with warp cores.
Okay, so Hester Starling asked, if you had to rank various series in terms of progressiveness and equality, where would you sit Voyager?
Okay, so Hester's a friend of mine. She's somebody that I've known for quite a few years. So if you look up any of our destination pictures from when we went to the con last year, there's some pictures of us on there rocking it out on the bridge.
And I do vividly remember a less than sober Q&A session we had on Facebook Messenger a couple of weeks ago with Hester.
Yes. In answer to the question, I'd put Voyager near the top. I'm not sure whether I'd put it at the top. I might put it joint at the top with Deep Space Nine, because I feel like Deep Space Nine does a really great job of showing us two really different female characters that are both really strong, really independent, really well constructed in their own right. And yet they're just so different from each other. And I just feel like the way that they are played out in the show is really brilliant. So I rank DS9 really high on that. Voyager, obviously, I think it goes without saying. You know, we've got a female captain, we've got female engineer, and they're often teching the tech. Later on as well, we get Seven, who also, you know, she's very competent, she's very able. So I think, yeah, I think they're the two that I would put up at the top. I'm not going to talk about too much about the others, because it's a bit difficult, I think, really, to place the others in order because of the different contexts of the different times in which they were made.
Yeah, and I think for me, I think I would give Voyager a solid B+ in this regard. I'm not sure it gets an A- even. It's hard for me, again, at the risk of like mixing To the Journey with my other show, Metatrex, on Star Trek and philosophy. I think it's hard for me not to answer that question in terms of the feminist movement in general. And I think you get a very 1990s view of women in the workplace in Voyager. You know, you do have, we've moved beyond, you know, women trying to be male-like in their role. So Captain Janeway, she definitely has a feminine side. She's large and in charge as captain. But I think the writers still put her in a fairly narrow box about what you would expect from a female captain. So I think they would push the boundaries a bit more. I mean, they'd have, you know, they'd have a lesbian captain, or they would have a captain who has, you know, some weird quirky hobby that makes her really a radically unique and quirky different individual, right? And I think Janeway is a fairly straight-laced captain, and they didn't take a lot of risks with her from a character development standpoint, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about how Star Trek in general is quite heteronormative in the way that it portrays everything. I'm hoping we'll see that change a bit with Discovery.
I think you can see a progression from, in the original series, women don't get command roles much at all, to what you see in Voyager.
Absolutely.
To, you know, the way gender roles are perceived, you know, 20 some odd years after the fact now. I think there's a natural progression there, that Voyager is, it's most of the way there, but it's not the end of that spectrum.
No. No, and I think, well, we've interpreted the question here specifically in terms of, you know, male-female equality. But if we want to talk about it more generally in terms of, like, racial equality, for example, I think Star Trek generally does that pretty well. I don't have any particular issues with the way that Star Trek deals with that, and I'm not sure any one series does that any better than any of the others.
I mean, I think the original series, of course, I think gets the nod for being the most progressive in the time period that it was made in. On the other hand, it's a thread and a theme that's carried definitely all the way through Star Trek and hopefully into Star Trek Discovery. But, you know, I don't think it's possible to really compare them in that regard. You know, each show has its own racial inclusiveness element to it that's part of the show. Yeah.
Suzanne, do you want to add anything before we go on to the next question?
No, you guys covered everything that I was pretty much going to say. So so I'll just say ditto.
Okay, well, we'll go on to the next question then. Our next question is from Amy Nelson. I wonder who she is.
I have no idea.
Yeah, someone named Amy who likes to talk about the Next Generation sometimes.
Oh, thanks, Amy. Lovely Amy from over on Earl Grey. Okay, so Amy has asked us, what is your favorite season and why?
I'll take this one. For me, it's a little hard to narrow it down. My favorite seasons of Voyager are seasons 4, 5, and 6. I think the writing was more on point. I think you get a higher percentage of really spot-on shows in those seasons. I would say I'd probably eliminate season 4, because as much as I love some of the episodes that introduce 7 of 9's challenges or her character development, it's really 7 of 9 focused in season 4, and to the detriment of some of the other characters. So I would say probably seasons 5 or 6, and I'd lean a little bit more towards season 5. I think they're really on point in season 5.
I would definitely agree. Season 5 is my absolute favorite. Everybody pretty much gets their own little nugget of something to do, and you get more character development from everyone. Well, maybe not Chakotay, but everyone else gets their character developed just that tiny bit more.
I think it's just a question of balance. I mean, everyone gets their character development. The show is mature at that point without being long in the tooth, and I think that's when you'd expect it to be on its game.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Season 5 was my pick as well. I mean, if we just have a look here at one little run of episodes that's in season 5 that just is absolutely phenomenal. Starting with episode 6 of season 5, we've got Timeless.
My favorite episode, yeah.
Followed by Infinite Regress, Nothing Human, 30 Days, Counterpoint, Latent Image, and Bride of Chaotica. I mean, that's a run of episodes.
Bride of Chaotica alone would put that season over the top.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't go wrong with Queen Arachne.
Yeah, so that little run of episodes there, I mean, I remember the first time I watched that little run and it just blew me away. Like, I was just like, fab episode after fab episode is just absolutely brilliant. And then also in season 5, we've got Bliss, which I really love. We've got Course Oblivion that we've talked about quite a few times already. We've got Someone to Watch Over Me, which speaks for itself in terms of being a fantastic episode.
Oh yeah, that's in my top 3 for sure. Yeah.
We've got 1159, which is an episode I really like, and we've also got Relativity, which we've talked about as well. So yeah, great series.
And that's such a diverse group of episodes. It's amazing that they could crank out that diverse of a group of episodes, week after week after week. It's really an amazing creative feat.
Yeah, I think this is definitely the point where Voyager was really on its game.
So our next question comes from Cy Rouse, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But Cy asks us, if you were introducing Voyager to someone who had never seen it, what would be your must-see episodes? And I think I answered this one a bit already. I think Timeless is a good way of introducing someone to Voyager in general. I might pick something like Someone to Watch Over Me or Course Oblivion, something with a really human element to it.
Well, I had Timeless on my list as well, because I just think it's a really grand scale kind of episode. I kind of divided my list into two, because I thought I had a list of episodes that I'd show someone who hadn't seen Voyager but had seen Star Trek. And the episodes that I put onto that list was Caretaker, because I just think sets up the premise completely. And you kind of don't really get the rest of the show without seeing it. I put Deadlock on there because I think Deadlock is just a, if you're going to convince somebody that they should watch Voyager, Deadlock's a fantastic episode in there. Macrocosm, because we just get to see Janeway doing a Janeway. It's just fantastic. Year of Hell, probably just because it's my favourite and it's one that I'm always looking forward to getting to if I'm showing people Voyager. I also threw Shattered in because it gives you a broad overview of everything. And I also picked Counterpoint because I just think it's such a well-written episode and it's just so interesting.
I think I might add in Future's End because it, you know, large portion of it takes place in the 20th century, very relatable. It's a very generic save the world story. I think you could show that to someone who's never seen Star Trek before and they would understand what's going on. You might have to explain the time cops element, but
yeah, I did consider putting that on my list. I thought if you had somebody who was a Star Trek fan and they really liked Star Trek 4, then Future's End would be the way to go because the parallels there are quite obvious. And then also on my list for people who'd never seen any Star Trek, I thought, well, I'll throw some fun stuff on here that's gonna get people wanting to come back. So I put down Heroes and Demons, Bride of Chaotica, and Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy because I think those are some of the most fun episodes.
Yeah, Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy is so funny. You could show that to anyone. The comedy alone would yeah, make that work for someone who's never seen Voyager before. Yeah.
Well, I had to go with Death Wish and then Q and the Gray just because I got to get Q in there.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Q.
Everybody loves Q.
From there, I would go to Resolutions just because I would want to know their take on what happened between Janeway and Chakotay. And then I would show them Shattered to be like, what do you think happened there? Did he really tell her the truth? Was there something that happened and he just didn't want to mess up the timeline?
So this is the Shipper's Tour, right?
It is the Shipper's.
Shipper's Tour.
I wonder if there's a 50 Shades of Q fanfic out there.
There will be. I can guarantee that there will be.
If it's Q, it's more than 50 Shades.
If anybody knows of one or has written one, please let us know.
Well, Cy also asked us, are you fans of any other sci-fi series outside of Star Trek?
Well, I love Battlestar Galactica. The reboot. I'm a huge, huge fan of the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. In fact, it's one of the only series that I've actually written fan fiction for apart from Star Trek. I'm a big fan, and I ship Starbuck and Apollo for the record, and I also really love Firefly. I'm a big Firefly cultist. There, I'm a brown coat, and I love Farscape. I like Red Dwarf, and obviously being British, I like Doctor Who.
I think it's amazing how different your list is than mine. I'm actually kind of a confession here. I'm not a huge science fiction fan, believe it or not. The things I like about Star Trek are not necessarily the science fiction elements. But I do have a list, and some of these are a little quirky and a little obscure. I love the tripods. Kay, you'll know what I'm talking about here. So it's this weird, quirky 1980s interpretation of the series of books by John Christopher, The White Mountains and The City of Golden Lead and The Pool of Fire. And if you haven't read those, they're juvenile science fiction books. You have to read them. I love the miniseries that was done. It's a weird 1980s British miniseries version of it. Very campy. This isn't a television or a film franchise, but I love the Rama series by Arthur C. Clarke. So that's one of my favorite science fiction reads. In fact, we were talking about that before we started the show today. Anyone who knows me knows that I love Mystery Science Theater 3000. And again, that's not really science fiction.
Yes,
it's more like
do.
A puppet show that it's more like a puppet show that happens to take place in space. But I'll count it with science fiction. And of course, like most people, I do like Star Wars, of course. But I've always been more team Star Trek. But you can see I'm not really a hard science fiction fan. And none of those items are really, with the exception maybe of Rendezvous with Rama, really hard science fiction. Mm.
Well, since you brought up Star Wars, it's probably confession time.
You didn't think we were going to have an Ask Me Anything episode without some confessions, did you?
I don't do Star Wars. I've never seen Star Wars. I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the rest of them. I know an awful lot about Star Wars for somebody that's not seen them.
Chewbacca does not like that answer.
Sorry, Chewbacca.
What were you? Were you gargling with Listerine or something? What were you doing?
Dude, my Chewbacca is awesome.
It is awesome, and I did know what it was, despite my lack of Star Wars knowledge. It's kind of hard to avoid it. In fact, it was only last year that I watched the first one for the first time, and I felt like I'd already seen it. I thought, I'm sure I've already seen this, even though I knew I hadn't, because I knew so much about Star Wars already.
What about you, Suzanne? What are your favorite science fiction franchises?
Well, without a doubt, I am stuck in the 90s with my science fiction. I love The X-Files. As soon as it came on, I was just drawn into it. Also, from the 90s, there was a show with Bruce Campbell, The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. I think it was on for maybe one season or two. It was just amazing. I love that. Another obscure one would be 7 Days, where this guy can only go back in time 7 days to fix something that went wrong. More towards recent science fiction would be Fringe, without a doubt. I loved Fringe. It was so sad to see it go.
I'm a little embarrassed. There's so many things I haven't seen, partly because I don't have time. I've got a full-time job and doing 2 podcasts a week now. I don't have time to watch TV anymore, so I'm really out of the loop on some of the current science fiction. But I'm so glad you mentioned the 90s, because for me, there's two more that I just thought of now that you mentioned your picks from the 90s. I used to love this weird little show called Time Tracks. Futuristic cop goes back in time to catch criminals that have gone back in time. Really awesome, fun little 1990s show. It's very stuck in the
90s. I missed that one.
And I also love Sliders.
Sliders was good.
Yeah.
Yes, Sliders that is really one of good. My favorites for sure.
Yeah, we had Sliders. I liked Sliders. If we're talking about really, really up-to-date stuff, I've loved Westworld so far. I've really, really enjoyed watching Westworld. That is a fantastic series. If anybody hasn't seen it and the premise even vaguely appeals to you, you should really give it a go. I hadn't picked up on it to start with, and everybody I knew was just raving about it, so I thought, I'm not really into Wild West stuff, and I'll give it a go, and it's absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
I only recently saw the original movie that's based on, and I remember being really captivated. I think Yul Brynner makes a better Terminator than Arnold Schwarzenegger in that movie, so I do kind of want to see it. It's on my list. I just haven't got that far.
Majel Barrett was amazing in that movie.
She was.
Yes.
That's right. We do get a Star Trek connection there.
Yeah, yeah. And if we're straying off the sort of TV science fiction a little bit, if we go into the world of video games, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. Mass Effect is my favorite video game series. So got to give a little shout out to Mass Effect.
Oh, see, I got to say I'm Team Halo in that regard. I did play a fair amount of Halo quite a few
years ago. I never had
an
Xbox. I was always a PlayStation girl, so I've not played Halo.
It's got to be Fallout, people.
I love Fallout as well. I do love Fallout as well, to be fair.
But if we're going off TV series, the Alien movies, all of them. I am an Alien fanatic.
And again, confession time, I've never seen it.
What?
Just kick me off the podcast.
Ellen Ripley,
right now,
you have no idea who Ellen Ripley is.
Isn't Sigourney Weaver in that one? In Alien? Is that right?
Hang your head in shame, Zachary.
I'm going to drive to California and kick you because you need to see it.
I'm hanging my head in shame right now, everyone.
There will now be a short interlude whilst Suzanne drives to California.
Intermission time. Time that stretch you've been wanting. And best of all, time to take your pick from that scrumptious array of tasty treats waiting for you at the snack bar. Where the popcorn's poppin', the cold drinks are sparkling, the hot dogs are sling, the coffee is steaming, and a luscious treasure of confectionery delights with ice cream and candy, and so much more to tempt any taste, is waiting for you now at the snack bar. You'll be notified in plenty of time when the next show is about to begin.
And we're back, and Suzanne has come and gone, and I've been thoroughly humbled.
He has a very large bruise on his shin.
And my ego.
Oh, and before we go off that question, I know this isn't strictly science fiction, but it is in the geeky realm. I'll just mention, like, 3 other things that I really love. So I love Once Upon a Time. That is such a great show, and it's so unique. I just love the premise of it and the fact that you just never know what's going to happen from week to week. It's just it's just so out there. It's fantastic. I really love Buffy and Angel. And I love Lord of the Rings. Slightly veering into the fantasy and sort of supernatural side of things there, but...
Well, I kind of have something like that. I mean, it's not fantasy, it's not supernatural, it's not really sci-fi. It's The Walking Dead. It's its own thing. And it comes back on tonight, and I can't wait! Can't wait!
I've seen some of The Walking Dead, but I haven't watched the last couple of seasons.
Oh, so good.
I guess I have a couple of last minute picks too while we're, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel here. I love the classic H.G. Wells The Time Machine.
Oh,
novel.
Yeah.
And I can really geek out on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series, although the movie was terrible, but the books are amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, book series as well. I have to give a shout out to anything by Ian M. Banks, but particularly Culture.
Speaking of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you guys, I just have two words for you guys. Don't panic.
Do you have your towel, Zachary? That is the most important question.
I always have my towel.
always.
Always have my towel.
Good, good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, and I've got my mug full of Pangalactic Gargle Blaster on top of everything.
Marvelous. Okay, well, the next question we have is from Ron Sarna. And Ron has asked, if Chakotay were never part of the crew... would Catherine have settled on Mr. Rochester or even Mr. Sullivan for her romantic desires? So I think he wants to know, if Chakotay wasn't around, who would we have Janeway hook up with?
Q.
That's a good one.
Q, without a doubt, Q. It would have been an interesting dynamic.
I love the dynamic between the two of them, actually. I think Kate Mulgrew and John Delancey have a really brilliant dynamic there. As far as I'm aware, they were quite good friends off screen. I think they actually kind of went round to dinner at each other's houses and stuff, so they knew each other quite well. I wonder whether or not their relationship off screen informed what they did with Q on Voyager. That's probably an interesting question.
It had to have.
I think it did, because they're so comfortable with each other. Yeah, I think that would have been really great.
Had they been on screen before Voyager?
I'm not sure, but I know they knew each other. I remember seeing an interview where they talked about like having dinner at each other's houses and stuff.
So this is a hard question for me. I think there's kind of like a realistic answer and then there's a fanfic answer, right? I think on screen, Captain Janeway doesn't let herself get romantically involved very much, right? So there are a few realistic answers. One might be Tuvok. I think she and Tuvok clearly have a rapport with each other.
Tuvok is married, man.
Yeah, but it's been a long time, right? So I could actually see her and the Doctor getting along. They seem to have an interesting rapport and an, you know, nuanced relationship. I could see that in an odd alternate universe. I could also see Captain Janeway staying hooked up with Kashyyyk and listening to classical music all night. So those are my realistic picks. I actually enjoy the fanfic of Captain Janeway and Harry Kim. I don't mind Cougar Captain Janeway. That's okay with me. But that's not a realistic pick, but it's actually my favorite of the bunch. So there you go.
I'm creeped out by that pick.
I originally wrote down that she'd stay with Mark because I just couldn't really think of anything better because, you know, Chakotay is the guy.
No, Harry Kim's the only one who holds out for old flames.
But because I strongly suspect that Ron is trolling us with this question... And we spoke a little bit earlier about the annoyance of the heteronormativity of Star Trek. I'm going to say 7 of 9.
Yeah, I could absolutely 100% see that. Yeah.
That would have been a good pairing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would work quite well, yeah.
So now I'm kind of picturing, remember that episode of The Voyager Conspiracy? And there's a scene with Captain Janeway and 7 of 9 in the shuttlecraft together.
Yep.
And Captain Janeway's listing out all the star dates of the things, the important milestones in their relationship. So Captain Janeway's like, star date 54321.8. Captain Janeway and 7 of 9 admit their true feelings for each other. We didn't introduce the last part of this question very well, but we could say Captain Kirk is in a relationship with the Enterprise, right? That's well established. And Captain Janeway is like that with Voyager to a lesser degree. She doesn't get romantically involved. She's committed to Voyager, and that's her principal relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she definitely has a love for Voyager. We even see her talking to the ship at various points. This actually came up on the Babel conference the other day, so it's quite interesting.
I don't think it's quite to the extreme that Captain Kirk you know, has for the Enterprise. But and I would say with Captain Janeway, she's a bit more maternal about her crew, right? She's in a relationship with her crew as a whole. Definitely. Not necessarily with Voyager as a bunch of bulkheads, right? I think Kirk really likes the Enterprise in particular, and I think Janeway cares more about her crew than she does about the actual ship.
She does, although I think that she sees Voyager as a part of the crew. In fact, she actually does that at one point.
She says that in Year of Hell.
Yeah, there's a really great quote from Year of Hell. I can't remember the exact quote now because it's quite long, but she does wax lyrical about her feelings for Voyager.
Yeah, Voyager's protected us and carried us.
Yeah, Voyager's like this interesting phenomenological extension of the crew, right? The ship is an extension of the crew.
Yeah.
It's a tool. It's part of them.
Yeah.
In the same way that like a tennis racket becomes an extension of the tennis player's arm, right? It becomes part of you when you're in the zone. I think Voyager is part of the crew when they're in the zone together.
And it's their home, you know, and I know that all of the crews on all of the shows, the ship is their home. But this is their home in a more profound way than that to me, because they're not able to go to their actual home.
Okay, so moving on. The next question comes from my namesake, Zach Moore, who asks us, regardless of Seven of Nine being added to the cast, would you have liked to see Kes stay for all seven seasons?
Well, I think I answered this when we were doing our movie episode, because I said the one thing I wanted from a movie was Seven of Nine and Kes in the movie. So, yes, I would have loved to have seen Kes stay and have Seven of Nine as well. In fact, I would have really loved to have seen what the dynamic between the two of them was, because I think during Seven's recovery process, everything that we'd seen of Kes and how she helped the Doctor and how she'd worked with other members of the crew and counseled other members of the crew over time.
Yeah.
I feel like she would have been a very strong, confident and sort of support for Seven if she'd been around.
Oh, definitely. Kes would have been Seven's very first friend. And just watching Kes help Seven grow and mature and...
I don't know. I think I'm in the minority on this one. As much as I like Kes as a character, I feel like the series got better when Kes left. And I feel like there's a problem with the writing in Kes. I don't think, and I might get hate mail for saying this, but I don't think there was a clear character development challenge that Kes had. A problem with herself that she needed to solve, a clear development path. Like with Seven of Nine, there's a clear development path from, you know, not knowing much about humanity, being Borg-like, to learning about individuality and her humanity. I just don't see that clear development path for Kes, and I think the writers struggled to know what to do with her as a result. So I think the series got better when she left, and I like the character. There's some, you know, absolutely wonderful, touching moments with Kes, but I think the series did get better when she was frankly out of the way. I know, let the hate mail ensue.
No, it's fine. You know, that's your view, and I do understand what you're saying to an extent, because I think she did get neglected, and I think in some ways they wrote themselves into a corner with her, because they accelerated her powers so quickly that she almost outgrew Voyager. And I mean, that is what we see in The Gift, you know, when she leaves, we see her outgrow her ability to kind of exist in that family anymore, and exist on this, almost on this plane, even for want of a better way of putting it. But I feel like her contribution to the crew is something that I missed after she left.
Yeah.
She just had this there was such a calmness about her, and such a sort of a sense of serenity almost, that whenever we saw her with other crew members, it was almost difficult for them to continue to be in whatever, you know, difficult situation or challenging mood or anything like that. You know, she had this, she just had the ability to just really, really calm people. And I think that the one that I always really remember with Kes is Resolutions, when she's the one that goes and convinces Tuvok that actually, you know, we can't just leave them behind. It doesn't matter what she said. And the fact that Tuvok listens to her, Tuvok doesn't really listen to anyone apart from Janeway. He doesn't really take advice from anybody else. He just kind of goes, well, this is my logic, and I'm not really interested in anybody else's opinion. But Kes manages to talk him round there, and she just, she's so wise, and she's so calm, and she's such a wonderful presence on the screen, and her voice is fantastic as well.
Just the compassion that her character constantly shows is something that I missed when she left. I would have rather have actually seen Harry leave. Than Kes.
And I guess there is an arc from Kes being a young, innocent being when she's introduced in Caretaker to someone who has enough weight with Tuvok where she can influence command decisions.
Yeah. And it happens so quietly as well. She gives people that impression and she gets that respect just through quiet little scenes and this real sort of gentle way that she has of... She can be incredibly persuasive, and yet she does it so gently that people don't even realize they're being persuaded.
There's a huge part of what you're saying that I really do agree with. I like Kes's calming presence. I like the fact that she serves as a therapist slash counselor slash best friend to the crew. And I like quiet Star Trek. I don't think every Star Trek episode needs to be action oriented. We don't need to have a villain or a battle, you know, and Kes is a great example of quiet Star Trek at its best.
Yeah.
Introspective quiet Star Trek. Yeah.
So Justin Ozer asks, what are your favorite underappreciated Voyager episodes?
I'll start this one off. Fairhaven.
Oh, boo.
I like Fairhaven. Yep. Sorry, guys.
Do I have to drive to California again?
I know. That reaction right there says that that's the right answer to this question.
Are we going to have another interlude?
Uh-oh. I'm leaving California now. I'm going to go hide in a nebula.
Well, I'm not sure mine is underappreciated, but before and after.
I have before and after on my list as well. I don't feel like we hear about it a lot. I don't feel like it comes up a lot in discussions, and yet it's a fantastic episode. There's just so much in there.
It's one of my favorites. I'm with you guys on this one. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, nice bit of Kes there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had a few on my list. The first one I put down was Coda, which we've already talked about loads. I think Coda's massively underappreciated. We've already gone into that in depth, so I won't talk about it anymore. The Cloud. Love The Cloud.
There's coffee in that nebula.
There is coffee in that nebula. Just, yeah. There's a lot of great stuff in The Cloud. Great character stuff. I love the scene at the end when we're in Sandrine's commander your stick. Beautiful.
Yes. Take that any way you like.
I really like the Thor, which is an episode that everybody tends to hate, but although I don't think that necessarily the execution is the best that we see in any episodes of Star Trek, I actually really love the message here.
Oh, definitely. The Thor was a very good episode, in my opinion.
And it has my favorite quote in it from the whole of Star Trek, which is, fear only exists for one purpose, to be conquered. And that is just an incredible quote that I just...
Yeah.
That's one that I carry around with me a lot. Definitely.
And Michael McKean's performance as the Clown was spot on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an episode that I think... Rewatch it. And try to just let the weirdness of it go and just think about what the message is. And I think that's the way to see it. It's definitely one that's stayed around in my head for various reasons.
I actually think I have a new answer to this question. We recently talked about Sacred Ground over on Metatrex at your suggestion, Kay.
Yep.
And that's an episode that really never worked for me. I never enjoyed it, never really understood it. I would skip over it in my rewatches, and I've developed a new appreciation for that episode, having talked about it now on Metatrex. So Sacred Ground is probably my final answer to that question.
Yeah, I think I always liked that episode, but I think I love it more now that you guys have kind of unpicked some of the stuff in there that I found confusing, because it's a very there's a lot going on in there. There's an awful lot going in there.
I still don't frankly enjoy it much as an episode. For some reason the story doesn't still really work for me, but I think I see the nuances there that I didn't see a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And then the final one that I picked out was Barge of the Dead, and this is actually an episode that I've rewatched a couple of times for things that we've talked about in the last few weeks, and I'd almost forgotten about it, and I'd almost forgotten how interesting an episode it is. And because I generally am not a big fan of Klingon-focused episodes, because I find that they're all a bit rah-rah-rah on it, etc., and it's just all a bit one-dimensional, and I'm just not drawn in by it. But Barge of the Dead just has that level of interest and nuance in it for me as a Klingon episode more than any of the others that I can think of.
I'm surprised, Kay, because you sing in Klingon so well. Do it again for us.
No, I've forgotten it now. Oh, God. I had it written down. Asian Tarje Deja E.
See, you know it.
So Ta Gospa Skral by Teak. Oh, I can remember it. That's weird.
It's like riding a targ. You never forget.
It is like riding a targ, which is something that I have also done in my dim and distant past. Next question. Yes. Okay, so AJ Black's a Tony, who I also met at Destination. He's asked, would you have liked to see more crossovers between Voyager and DS9 while they were running in tandem? And then somebody else, Josh, actually wrote his own comment to this, which was, he said that he would have liked to have seen Voyager encounter one of the 100 changelings in the Delta Quadrant, which I agree with. I think that would have been great.
That would have been very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we answered this a little bit last week when we had one of our associate producers, Bruce Lish, on the show with us. We started talking about Voyager and DS9 crossovers. I could easily imagine a scenario where the wormhole goes crazy and someone ends up in the Delta Quadrant instead of the Gamma Quadrant. You can totally science fiction the heck out of this, right? But I kind of imagine this great line that the Doctor could have. I'm a doctor, not a wormhole alien.
I'm a doctor, not a Bajoran prophet. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, but I think he'd try and play off being a Bajoran prophet.
He'd have a go. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, if somebody accidentally thought that, he'd have a go, wouldn't he? He'd play up to that.
Oh, yeah.
You can imagine. Yeah. You can imagine him there. What is this linear time?
Actually, it would actually be fun to see the Doctor paired up with Dr. Bashir, like on a shuttlecraft, and they have to solve a problem or something. It would just be fun
they
to see
would
those
have
two
play a very there. Interesting dynamic together.
Absolutely.
I'd really
well,
they like
both
to
they're
see
both
that.
Very impressed with their medical abilities, right? So I could see kind of a one-upmanship.
There'd be a one-upmanship, yeah. There'd also be, I can see them collaborating on stuff and just coming up with some really awesome solutions to medical things that have been hanging around for a long time. I can definitely see them doing that. But the dynamic between them would be quite volatile, I think. So yeah, that'd be an interesting one.
They wouldn't just science the science, they would medical the medical.
Yeah, they would medical the medical. couple of other ideas that I had. Since in Caretaker, we actually hear, I think it's Neelix say, oh, you've been whisked away from somewhere else in the galaxy about Voyager. And so what he's kind of implying there, although they never actually say it, is that not all of the ships and people that have been brought there by the Caretaker are from the same place in the Alpha Quadrant, even though that's mm-hmm. the ships that we see. So I think it would have been quite interesting if we'd seen a Dominion ship get trapped in the Delta Quadrant.
That would be really cool.
Or a Cardassian ship, or...
No, because then Seska would join up with them.
But yeah, I'd find that interesting, because I mean... You know, that could happen a similar time to Voyager. So we're just at the start of the Dominion War there. So we've still got the Dominion are kind of, who are these humans? And, you know, what's going on with the Alpha Quadrant and everything else? So I think we could get some interesting crossover there, definitely. And also, if the Dominion ship had changelings on it, they could cause all kinds of trouble. Because we do actually see Voyager encounter changelings in the books, but I won't go into that too much for anybody that hasn't read them. But Spirit Walk.
Yes, yes, yes.
Maybe the banjo player was a changeling.
Maybe. Who knows? And the other thing that I thought would have been really interesting would have been if we could have seen Deep Space Nine crew involved in the search for Voyager, considering the proximity they had to where Voyager went missing. And in fact, we might have even seen families of the Voyager crew at Deep Space Nine. Almost like that's a staging post for the search. So I think that could have been interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they're going to start searching for Voyager from somewhere, it would be from DS9, right?
I would have thought so, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's near the Badlands-ish.
It's the closest outpost Starfleet have got, yeah.
Yeah.
So it would make sense. It would definitely make sense. So
they could have taken a character like, say, Michael Eddington and put him on Voyager.
Ooh.
In kind of a weird alternate mashup, right?
Because the when do they actually meet Eddington in Deep Space Nine? Is it before Voyager goes missing? I can't remember.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I can totally see Michael Eddington adding some additional Maquis drama to the Starfleet Maquis drama.
I think it must be beforehand, actually, because I'm pretty sure they did that whole Maquis storyline in Deep Space Nine as a setup for Voyager. So I think it must have been before that.
Because Chakotay and B'Elanna and the rest of the Maquis and Voyager, they're like half Maquis, right? I mean, they give up the Maquis thing pretty easily in season one of Voyager. But I could see Michael Eddington holding on to that no matter what.
Yeah.
Kind of like Seska in that way, but... In fact, he would make an interest. He would make an interesting kind of companion, not in a romantic sense, but an interesting dramatic companion for Seska.
Yeah, that would have been really interesting, actually. I would have liked to have seen that. So, yeah, I think even though obviously crossovers are difficult because of the distance thing, there are definitely things that they could have done.
You can add that to the fanfic list to write.
Oh, it's long. It's long, don't worry.
So our next question comes from Lee Hutchison, who is co-host of our sister show, Earl Grey, Trek FM show on Star Trek The Next Generation. Lee asks us, did you watch the special launch night for Voyager on BBC Two?
Well, I'm going to guess that this question is aimed at me, because I'm pretty sure neither of you had access to BBC Two at the time. And I'm sorry, Lee, my answer is no, I didn't. So I'm not sure we can add a lot more to that.
No, I'm American. We were watching it on UPN.
Yes. There you go.
I also watched it on the UPN. So Josh Truax has asked us, did any of you play Voyager Elite Force, the video game? And is there any chance of doing a TTJ episode about it? Well, Josh, I actually did play the Elite Force video game. I loved it. Recently ran across the user guide for it. But with all the moves that I've done these past however many years, I can't find the game. So that makes me very sad. I just have the user guide, but no game.
Aww. Despite being quite a keen video game, I haven't actually played this one. I think it's available on PlayStation 2?
No, I don't know. Mine was for my computer.
Right, okay.
That's how long ago it was.
So I think it was PS2 original Xbox kind of era. And I do still have my PlayStation 2, so if I can get a copy of it, I will give it a go. And yeah, maybe we'll talk about it at some other point.
It is lots of fun.
So I'm kind of a part-time gamer. I play quite a bit of World of Warcraft, although not recently. I played quite a bit of Halo. I could totally geek out on retro games. I've not played this game, but you guys could totally convince me to pick up a copy of this game and give it a go, and we could talk about it on TGJ.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome.
Fun. It'd be great.
Yeah.
From what I remember, the game was pretty awesome.
I think we need to throw that on the calendar so I actually remember to, you know, I need to get set up and get the system and get the game and stuff. So
yeah.
If we're going to do it, let's throw it on the calendar and we'll talk about it after the show.
Yeah. So, Josh, we probably can't say a lot about it now, but we're all excited about giving it a go and we'll put that on the calendar for later in the year. So watch out for that. Okay. So Patrick Carlin has asked us, well, he's asked me actually. This might seem like a silly one, but something I've been wondering for a while. Kay, how did you come up with your Twitter handle of Choco Weeble? Well, apparently other people are curious about this as well. And I'm very sorry to have to disappoint you, but there isn't an interesting or exciting story about how I came up with this username. What happened was, around the time that I was in uni, and, you know, usernames were starting to become a thing on the internet, I was sitting around in the uni bedroom with a friend of mine, and I was bemoaning the fact that it was really difficult to find usernames because all the good ones were taken. I need a username. What username can I have? And she randomly just said Choco Weeble. And I've had it ever since. So that is a story. There's no, it means nothing. There's no story behind it. She just randomly came up with it and I kept it. So there you go. That's it.
So I genuinely don't know this. It was this like America Online? Did they have AOL in the UK at that time period?
Was this? Yeah.
So was this your AOL name?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've been KJ Janeway 8 that long.
Yeah, I've probably had this username since about 2002, 2003, something like that.
I used to go with my ham radio call sign, KD6DXA, and occasionally on the internet you can still find me under KD6DXA, but generally I've switched to my actual name at this point.
Yeah, and scarily, if you Google it, there are about 18 pages of results and they're all me, so please don't do that.
I'm Googling it right now. Chaco Weevil.
If you're looking for my fan fiction, yeah, right. I very smartly have that under a different username, so you won't find it.
You're the Jeffrey Combs of the internet. I am the Jeffrey Combs of the internet.
They're all me. I've probably got really, really embarrassing blog articles I've written and stuff on there.
Well, see, I don't know whether to be like, disappointed or relieved that we didn't get more personal questions about us on this Ask Me Anything episode.
Relieved. Definitely relieved.
I think I'm team relieved, yeah. So Patrick, who is also our diehard TTJ cheerleader and chief enthusiast, also asks us, what are some of your guilty pleasure Trek episodes, either Voyager or otherwise?
Oh, guilty pleasures. From TOS would definitely be The Squire of Gothos. I love Trelane. Love him.
Yeah, and he is a Q, right?
In my brain, he is.
Yeah, he is in mine as well.
My next gen picks would be, and there's a little bit of a correlation between these two. Don't know if you'll see it right off the bat. The Naked Now and Attached. They both work for my PC shipper heart.
Yep.
I see where you're going with this.
Yep.
So from the original series, I picked Operation Annihilate, which I like to say is the one with the demon pancakes. Because I think on the face of it, it's not a great episode, but there's just something I really like about it. Spock just amuses me in that episode. He's great. And those pancake things just look so awful, but I love it. I love that episode. I did pick a pick from the animated series, and I'm not sure whether this counts as a guilty pleasure aside from, you know, the animated series being a guilty pleasure in and of itself, because I know some people do think that. But I picked Yesteryear. I really love Yesteryear, which is the episode where we see a lot about young Spock. And I really like that as an episode because it gives us a bit more insight into him that is really nice. Next gen, I also pick Naked Now. Not necessarily from a Picard crusher shipper kind of perspective. Although
from a Data and Tasha Yar standpoint?
I'm down with them. Well, Data Tasha Yar is also a thing that I'm not averse to the idea of. But I love Naked Now because it's the very first episode of Star Trek that I ever saw.
Aha.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah.
And the bit at the end where we have Data putting all of the chips back into the computer at the end, that is the most abiding memory I have of Star Trek from when I was a little kid. That is one that really stayed with me. And years later, I still remember seeing that for the first time and being really captivated by it. Plus, it's just a hilarious episode. I really love it. I really love it.
So are these supposed to be episodes that you like just geek out on? Or are these supposed to be like guilty pleasure episodes, like episodes you shouldn't like but you do?
Yeah, they're supposed to be episodes you shouldn't like but you do. That's what I'm going with. Because, you know, we're not supposed to like The Naked Now. It's supposed to be rubbish. And a rehash of a TOS episode.
But it's so good.
Yeah, it is so good. My other TNG pick is Sub Rosa, which gets a lot of pad press, but it just
I love Sub Rosa. I don't know why people hate on that so much. It's a ghost story. It's not really science fiction, but I love that one.
It's brilliant. I see a lot of parallels, actually, between Sub Rosa and Captain Janeway's Gothic Hollow novel.
Oh, definitely.
And it reminds me of Cat's Paw a bit, too.
My Deep Space Nine picks are Move Along Comb. This is a favourite of Brandon's from the network, Brandon Shaymataler, our Patreon manager and presenter of Melodic Treks. I do have a few moments in Move Along Home that I find really cringeworthy, and I just like the Alan Moraine bit. I try and switch off at that moment, but the rest of it I really love because I'm a role player, and it just reminds me of, like, you know, D&D sessions back in the day. There's something very, very linear role playing session about Move Along Home that just really appeals to me as a role player. And the other one is Meridian. Now Meridian's the one where they have this planet that pops into existence for a little while every however many hundred years. I can't remember the exact time. And Dax meets this guy that she falls in love with and she wants to kind of run off with him. And I just really like that because I'm a hopeless romantic and there's just something really nice about it.
Yeah, I think all of us like the shipper episodes in pretty much all of the series, right?
So. Oh, yeah. Yes. and then my Voyager picks. I've actually picked Tattoo and The Fight. Both of which are episodes that everybody hates, but I think generally speaking, when I was trying to do my Voyager ones, I was just going to say anything with Chakotay. Those are all my guilty, because most of his episodes are not that great, but I love them anyway because I love him, and I just hate the fact that he gets so much bad press because I think there's so much more to him than people realize.
There is, and I love Tattoo.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you guys. I'm not a fan of the fight. I could ditch that episode altogether. But Tattoo, I love Tattoo as well. So we're all on the same page.
I really like the fight because... Shall I be honest about why I really like the fight?
Yeah.
I really like the fight because the fight the fight has a bajillion post-the-fight fan fictions that are all amazing. Come on, you know this is true, Suzanne.
I do know that's true. There are some really good ones.
I actually read a new one earlier that I hadn't read before, so. And it was great. Awesome. It was really good. And then my Enterprise picks are Unexpected, which gets a lot of bad press, but it just cracks me up. And Harbinger, because I ship the heck out of T'Pol and Trip. So there you go. Those are mine.
I'm not sure I can come up with a pick from each series off the top of my head, but if I had to think of my absolute guiltiest Star Trek episode, it's probably an original series episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of? Okay. I like my sexy Trek, and Andrea has the sexiest Star Trek outfit in all of Star Trek. Yeah. I'm not ashamed. I like my shipper Trek, and I like my sexy
That's
Trek.
That's the Dr. Roger Corby
exactly.
Yeah. Just checking I've got the right one.
The one with they make the android of Kirk and they're spinning around in the thing. Yeah. That's such a weird.
Yeah, I'm still learning my original series episode titles, so I'm practicing.
And that's one of the first episodes of Star Trek I ever watched. I think the first episode I actually ever really did watch was Arena, but I think that's one of my earliest memories is watching What Are Little Girls Made Of, and maybe Miri too. I remember watching that one early on. From Next Generation, I think one of my guilty pleasures is probably In Theory, the episode where Data gets a girlfriend.
Yeah. I do like that episode. Yeah. But it's so sad at the end. For somebody that can't feel emotion, he's like so melancholy.
No, he's like, I'll just delete the subroutines. What are you talking about?
but there's still this sadness. I know he doesn't feel the sadness, but it's... Oh,
you feel the feels. It's you feel all the feels. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
That episode, I like it, but the end of it just breaks my heart.
Well, Jenna feels the feels at the end of that episode, for sure. Let's see. Can I pick something from Voyager? I think that's a challenge. What's my guilty Voyager episode? I would say...
Fairhaven.
Well, I don't...
You said you love Fairhaven, and if you don't feel guilty about it, you should.
You should feel very guilty.
So from Voyager, if I had to pick a Voyager episode, I think my guilty pleasure is probably not... We mentioned Fairhaven earlier, but I think even more guilty than that is Spirit Folk.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy Spirit Folk, and most people don't, right? So
Yeah. That one can just be purged.
Is that the episode where we get the quote, though, I have a boyfriend who malfunctions?
Yes.
Because that is a fabulous quote, despite the fact that I hate the Michael Sullivan thing. That quote is brilliant. That quote is glorious.
But you could also use that quote if your boyfriend is Data.
That is true.
Okay, so I guess that leaves a pick from Deep Space Nine and a pick from Enterprise. And for Deep Space Nine, I would have to say that my pick is probably Children of Time. And if you remember, that's the episode where the crew of the Defiant crash lands on a planet and they meet 8,000 of their descendants in an alternate timeline. For some reason, I just find that a particularly charming, sweet, touching episode, regardless of how they solve the problem and get out of the situation at the end. I think the idea of meeting your descendants and getting to know them and getting attached and starting to care about these people you don't know, it's just such a well-crafted science fiction episode. So that's probably been my guilty pleasure on DS9. For Enterprise, I only have two words. Detox gel.
You're saying you love a compilation of all of the decon chamber scenes. Is that what you want?
Yes. As one, mashed together as one episode.
Mashed together as one episode. I know that they're not the most PC of scenes that we get in Enterprise.
That's okay. These are guilty pleasures,
personally,
right?
Personally, I find them hysterical. I find it hilarious that they all just run around constantly in their underwear. In the first series and the second series. Later on, not so much, but to begin with, they're just constantly running around in their pants. That is the British version of pants, by the way.
Well, that's because they fixed the environmental controls after that, and it wasn't so warm on the ship.
Yeah.
All of the Star Trek series have people running around in their underwear. We get Captain Picard running around in his robe sometimes.
Oh, yeah,
we get
on
Captain
Risa.
Janeway in her pink nighty. We get people running around in their underwear all the time in Star Trek. Let's not kid ourselves. And Star Trek fans like their sexy Trek, and these are guilty pleasures, so there you go.
Yeah. But, I don't think in any other series of Star Trek than Enterprise do we see every single one of the cast members in their underwear at some point during the same season. Because I actually did a stamp collection back when Brandon and Chris were doing a Ready Room episode quite a while ago. They talked about the new stamp collections that were done for the 50th anniversary, I think in Canada. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about what they would do as stamp sets. And one of the ones that Chris suggested was the decon scenes, Starfleet Blues. And I actually created a stamp set. Awesome, so if you go onto the fridge on the Babel conference, somewhere on that thread is my Starfleet Blues stamp set, which has got a picture of every member of the Enterprise crew in their underwear.
I haven't seen that. I don't know how I missed that, but as soon as we're done recording, we're going to go check it out. So there you go. Those are my guilty pleasures.
Ruby Elizabeth asked, if you could give each character a theme song, what would it be and why?
Well, I love this question. This was actually my favorite question out of all of them. I went to town on this question because whenever I'm writing fan fiction, I always have playlists and stuff that I associate with the stories that I'm writing. So this is constantly something that I'm doing anyway. So I'll start with some general picks because I did a few general picks. So the song that I associate most strongly with Voyager as a whole is the song Lead Us Home by Dana J. If you listen to that song, it could have been written about Voyager. That's all I'm saying. It just absolutely encompasses it. And actually, if you look on YouTube, there's a really brilliant fan video that's been done to that song of Voyager. And yeah, it's fantastic. I'm also going to mention the song Me and My Gang by Rascal Flatts, because when we were doing the chapter titles for the Chakotay and B'Elanna episode that we did a couple of weeks ago, I actually accidentally used a quote from this song as one of the titles. It's a brother and a sister kind of thing. So I thought I had to mention it. I had to mention this one. So those are my general picks. And I'm gonna let everybody else talk for a little bit because I have loads more, but I don't want to monopolize this question. Because that's in danger of that happening.
Well, I only have one for like a character. The other two that I came up with are kind of deal with relationships.
Okay.
And no, there's not a Janeway Chakotay one, which I know shocks everyone. But
I'm astonished.
So the one that I came up with for a single character, his song, it's for Chakotay, and it would be 500 Miles by the Proclaimers. To me, that just encompasses the passion that Chakotay gives everything. That's all.
I like that. Good pick. Yeah, I can see that. I'm singing it in my head now.
I know. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to sing that song.
500 miles and miles and I would walk 500.
So like Suzanne, I only have one pick here, and it's for Tuvok. And my pick for Tuvok is The Logical Song by Super Tuvok.
Why did I not think of that? That's amazing.
That is awesome.
That is brilliant. Oh. I love what you did there.
Now every time you see Tuvok on screen, you're going to go, logical, logical.
So I also had a pick for Tuvok. This one's a bit out there, so you've kind of got to see what I'm saying. But I actually picked for Tuvok No Day But Today, which is a song from Rent. And the reason that I picked that was because I feel like Tuvok just kind of accepts the situation instantly. Vulcans in general are just so immediate in the way that they think about things, and they're so present, and they're so like, this is the situation. I'm just logically going to deal with it. There's nothing I can do to instantly make us be home, so I'm just going to go with it. So that just works for Tuvok for me. And it's a song that I really love as well. So that's my Tuvok pick while we're talking about Tuvok.
Well, my next one would be for B'Elanna and Tom. It would be Opposites Attract by Paula Abdul.
Yes.
That's a good one.
I like it. That is brilliant, yeah. I could see that.
That
working.
Just sums them up right there.
Okay, so Tom and B'Elanna then. For B'Elanna, I picked Fight Song by Rachel Platten, which I think it just really works for her. If you haven't heard it, listen to it, and it really works for B'Elanna, her whole outlook and like her situation, how she feels about coming to Voyager and these new. She sees it as a fresh start. That's how I see it for her. She sees this as a fresh start after her initial kind of what's going on. And that song works for her. And for Tom, I picked In Her Eyes by Josh Groban. Because
that's
I just
nice one.
Yeah. because
that's a nice one.
I feel like B'Elanna does so much to kind of change him and make him grow as a person, and he grows up a lot as a result of his relationship with her. They both grow as a result of that relationship, and I feel like that's something that really encompasses how I see him.
My last pick would be for Tom and Harry's bromance. And it's from the movie Toy Story. You've got a friend in me.
Aww.
So I don't know about you guys, but when I think of Tom and Harry's bromance, I think of the Bosom Buddies theme song, Billy Joel's My Life.
That's brilliant. Yeah, I like that.
They're riding bicycles down the corridor together.
Nice.
Of course, Tom with his retro enthusiasm, he would have like a banana seat bicycle or something, like straight out of the 50s.
But since it's Bosom Buddies, would they then be in drag?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Only in fan fiction, yeah.
Depending what holodeck the story they're going into.
Or during Ponfar Night at the Playboy Mansion.
Anything goes during Ponfar Night at the Playboy Mansion.
Yes,
to bring it back
does.
To last week. Yeah.
Well, my Harry song was a bit more serious than that. I actually picked a song called Crushed and Created by Tamara Bailey, because I feel like initially Harry's really... he's devastated by what's happened, but actually ends up being the making of him. So that's how I see that song for Harry, if you listen to that one. So the rest of my picks. For Janeway, I picked a song called Sweet Silver Lining by Kate Vogel. This is a lot about, you know, the fact that she's got a lot on her shoulders and she has the weight of everybody relying on her. So that's kind of how I see that one. For Chakotay, I picked Go the Distance from Hercules. I think that one speaks. I think that one speaks for itself. So I'm not going to say too much more about that.
Oh yeah.
And I will find my hero's welcome waiting in your arms. There we go. I've said it. for the Doctor, I was thinking about what I could pick for the Doctor, and I thought the Doctor needs some kind of really over the top, really kind of, you know, Peter Cetera style power ballad. That's what the Doctor requires. So I chose a song called Hero by Charlotte Pirelli. And it's actually a song that was Sweden's entry in the Eurovision Song Contest a few years back. And you just have to listen to it. It's a way over the top power ballad with just like all the bells and whistles. And it just, that's just the Doctor seeing himself as the emergency command hologram for me. So,
okay. So you totally just made me think of a pick for Harry Kim.
Okay.
I can picture Harry Kim playing Somewhere Out There by Linda Ronstadt and James Ingram on his clarinet.
Yes.
For Libby, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
that's adorable.
Billy Mouskowitz.
Picture Harry Kim in these little mouse ears playing his clarinet.
But now I want him to sing There Are No Cats in America.
I've gone. I'm five. Well, I'm away.
We waste a secret weapon.
Brilliant. So for Kes, I picked Let It Go from Frozen. That one speaks for itself.
Nice.
For Seven, I picked Because of You by Kelly Clarkson, because I feel like Seven is like really hampered by the Borg and her parents and everybody that's like really let her down in her history. And I feel like she's actually quite tragic, even though she doesn't often show a lot of emotion. So that's that one for Seven. That's quite a tearjerker, but there you go. And for Neelix, I picked Tears of a Clown by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. Because
Neelix.
There's a lot going on under the surface there for me.
But getting back to 7 of 9, don't you think 7 of 9's song would be Perfection by Cher?
Well, I toyed with the idea of that. But I tried to be a bit more... I was serious about this. I was very serious. I took this...
Oh, yeah, your picks are much more well thought out than mine.
I took this question very seriously. I am going to sneak one final pick in there, because it's not from Voyager, but it is a character one. Because I do have a song that I really strongly associate with a character from another part of Star Trek. So my Kira song is She's Always a Woman by Billy Joel.
I love that song.
And it works so perfectly for Kira.
I usually karaoke that song.
And, you know, I don't often get to talk about how much I love Kira on this podcast, so I'm going to take a little moment.
No, I don't
there.
Think I've ever heard you say that before.
No, we normally have to cut all
this
that out.
This is news to me.
We normally have to cut out me talking about how much I love Kira because we're supposed to be talking about Voyager, but I can get away with it this week. I love Kira, in case you hadn't already guessed that. And I'm done. So our final question is from Shoab Mirza. I hope I'm saying that correctly. And he says, Tuvok is my favourite character, as Tim Russ is brilliant in my eyes, especially in those Tuvok unhinged scenes and episodes. And asks, what are each of your favourite Tuvok unhinged scenes, episodes, and why?
Well, mine would be, I'm not sure if you could classify it as unhinged, but we get to see Tuvok as not quite Tuvok in Riddles, and I love Tim Russ's performance in that episode. He just knocks it out. Such a great, heartfelt performance from him.
Yeah.
That is an amazing performance.
It is. Yeah, absolutely agree.
So mine is a slightly less serious pick. In fact, it goes in the category of things that never really happened in true Voyager tradition. This is from Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy when Tuvok is in the Doctor's daydream. You know what I'm talking about? In the Doctor's daydreams, when Tuvok starts to go into Pon Farr.
You are a Vulcan man.
You are a Vulcan
that
man.
That one, yes. For some reason, that's the one that came immediately to mind. But seriously, though, I think in any episode when Tuvok loses his logic and he gets more emotional, I totally understand this. I mean, especially me as a former logic teacher, people would constantly accuse me of acting on emotion. And I do, totally. I'm like the least logical logician you've ever seen. You know, I act on emotion from my hip way more than I use my head, my brain a lot of the time. So I can understand what it's like to be perceived as someone who's supposed to be logical, but really you've got this underlying emotional current that's driving your actions. And whenever Tuvok lets his guard down, you see his emotions come through. Any of those scenes really work for me. And I relate to them personally.
I just noted a couple down here. I really like the Body and Soul, which is where we get Tuvok's Pon Farr. We start to see some of the masks slip in that episode. And the other one that immediately came to mind was Infinite Regress, which is the one where he's helping Seven, and he really starts to kind of lose his grip a bit there. But I'm not going to talk too much about them because we really like this topic idea, and we're going to talk a lot more about this on a future episode. So thanks a lot for that question.
Yeah, I have quite a few more that I'm just like, ah.
Yeah, definitely. I want to delve into this topic a lot more.
This topic is definitely worthy of an entire TTJ episode.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's our final question.
Well, we survived, you guys. Those were great questions. Yay. No, really, thanks to everyone who sent us in questions. Sometime down the road, we're going to do another Ask Me Anything episode of TTJ. You know, 25 or 50 episodes down the road. So, you know, have your second round of questions prepared, everyone. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed seeing the questions that everyone had for us.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed doing this. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, everyone.
So it's been really great answering all of your questions this week. But that's not the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Was the BBC wrong in doing this? Not under the auspices that this is a kid's show and showing it during, you know, when kids would be watching. Because if you think about it, there's 75 other episodes that they did show, some with some minor editing, which I think would have been appropriate.
The 602 Club.
Going back to the Gotham thing really quickly, I know this is semi-derailing. Why would you want to move to Gotham? I mean, he has to have been there. It's like the picture that he has on his wall is this beautiful, shining, like, daytime view, if I'm not mistaken, of Gotham, which I don't think we ever see. It was like, I'm not really sure. Charm City looks quite nice. Like,
so. Literary Treks.
But still, at the same time, you're left with that what if, you know? And I know that, like, the Parallels episode gives you a couple of brief glimpses of Riker in command after Picard is dead, and it doesn't seem to be going well for Mr. Riker at that point.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website, and you can grab the RSS link as well.
Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network through Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats in our content development team, and many more. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take a moment and acknowledge a few people. First of all, our founder and publisher of Trek FM, C. Brian Jones. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. Brandon Shea Metalla, our Patreon manager. We also have some associate producers we'd like to thank. Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, and Norman Lau.
And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. And also check out audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Well, if you have any other questions for us, you can fill out a form on our website, trek.fm/contact. There's also a voicemail that you could leave for us. Look on the sidebar of the To the Journey show page on the Trek FM website, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can find Trek FM on Twitter, and the handle is @TrekFM. Or if you're on Facebook, look us up there, facebook.com/TrekFM. While you're on Facebook, check out the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. To find it, type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. Or go to our website at trek.fm and click the discussion button on the menu bar. We also invite you to leave a rating and review of To the Journey on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. Kay, if someone would like to compare their Kira song with yours, how could they reach you on the interwebs?
I would absolutely love it if they wanted to do that. They can find me in the Babel Conference. And if they want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is @ChocoWeeble. Zachary, when you're not touring the corridors of Voyager on your banana seat bicycle, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek FM as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. If you want to talk about Star Trek with me, you can find me in the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group, and you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, @ZacharyFruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And Suzanne, when you're not singing a power ballad with Harry Kim and the Kim Tones, where can people find you around the Trek FM network and around the interwebs?
Well, you can occasionally find me on the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is @KJaneWay8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8.
So next week, one of us will be replaced by a changeling, and you'll have to try and guess who it is. But until then, this has been To the Journey.